Here we go on a Sunday morning. It's just after 8 o'clock, and you are listening to Fox Sports Radio 98.9 FM, 1340 AM flagship of the Vegas Golden Knights. I'm Brian Feldman, and this is Out of Line. We're here same time every week, live in the Fox Sports Residential Bank Corp studio in Las Vegas. The we includes co-host Caleb Herring, the last UNLV quarterback to lead the Rebels to a bowl game. Caleb is part of the UNLV football broadcast team and the co-host of the soon-to-be Marcus Arroyo show, along with Russ Langer on our sister station, ESPN Leader. Also here, Chris Magnum Chapman, who also moonlights as the Vegas Golden Knights locker room reporter on the Vegas Golden Knights radio network. Talked to Ryan Reeves after the fight last night. You'll hear that in a little bit. And last but not least, the man behind the tripod and the best damn intern in the business,
The Wiz!
Spencer The Wiz Ostrowski. And I heard you pronounce the name last week,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I pronounced it right.
You wanted to just shove it right in my face.
Absolutely.
You did.
I didn't even practice.
No,
I looked at it on a piece of paper that day, and I said, Ostrowski.
He even got the V in there. The show is also streaming on the LV Sports Network and can be seen on Facebook Live. The page is called Out of Line. That's Outta Line. And you can watch on our personal Facebook pages as well. Your calls are welcome. The Fox Sports Residential Bank Corp studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
And the Rebels will win it 78-73 in a game, Curtis, where I'm going to say the Rebels out-coached and outworked the Lobos in the pit.
Here's the defenseman Taves, fires ahead. It's cut down in the slot. Fleury sticks it away, and the clock runs out. Marc-Andre Fleury, his fourth shutout of the season, and the Knights defeat the Islanders 1-0.
I'm The Wiz, and this is What's on Tap, sponsored by our title sponsor, Residential Bank Corp. Whether purchasing a new home or refinancing the home you already own, Residential Bank Corp is the company to turn to for all your home financing needs. Residential Bank Corp, funding America one neighborhood at a time. On tap, both the Vegas Golden Knights and the UNLV Running Rebels won yesterday. NASCAR is in town next weekend, and Brian gets a free lunch. Today's guest, former Olympic gold medalist and four-time Stanley Cup champion Ken Morrow, and Jeff Motley, the vice president of public relations at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway, will join the Fox Sports Residential Bank Corp studio line. I'm The Wiz, and that's What's on Tap, brought to you by our title sponsor, Residential Bank Corp. If you're looking to buy a home or refinance the home you already own, choose a company you can trust. Residential Bank Corp, funding America one neighborhood at a time.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Yeah, it is time for Nightcap, and the Vegas Golden Knights last night playing the New York Islanders, a team that's been pretty hot this year, although they were coming off of a really tough loss and a bad loss, and they played really well, especially the goaltender for last night for the New York Islanders. Couldn't have played better. 42 of 43 shots saved in net last night. You can't do or ask for much better than that when you're talking about a goaltending job. But the bottom line was, as well as Varlamov played for the Islanders, he just, 43 shots is 43 shots on goal. And what are you going to do, Chris? We were at the game. Varlamov played so well. But on the other end, Marc-Andre Fleury made the saves he needed to make at the right time. And I think it just really fires him up as a goaltender. You got to stay on your toes when you're watching the other goaltender really stand on his head. And I think it fired Marc-Andre Fleury up and even played better.
Well, it was one of those games where you knew it was going to be a tight game just based on the history between these two teams. Obviously, the game earlier this year, out on the island, the Islanders were able to take care of business. I believe they won that game in overtime. I think Malcolm Subban actually played that game, played really well. I think the final was 2-1, if I'm not mistaken. But, last night, Shea Theodore was the best player on the ice for the Golden Knights. I felt like maybe he was the best player on the ice, period. And as you mentioned, Fleury, he didn't need to do a whole lot, but he made the big saves when he needed to make them. Riley Smith, very fortunate to get his own rebound off of a deflection off the post, and he's able to put it in behind Varlamov, who played an amazing... I mean, the save that Varlamov had on Paul Stastny's goal...
Unbelievable.
...was one of the best saves of the year, because literally that puck was essentially on the red
line.
It was
behind him. I mean, he literally
and he's able to dive and get his paddle on the puck, keep it out of the net. I thought the Islanders are a team that right now they're as you mentioned, they lost their last game before the Golden Knights, not a great performance, but they have a lot of outstanding players. And Barry Trotz, one of the best coaches in the NHL. I love watching Matthew Barzal, maybe my favorite player in the league. I was unfortunate to see him take that big hit from Nick Holden. And obviously Anders Lee took exception to that hit. And after the game, Holden was you know, he said, look, you know what? That's what he should do. He's a captain. That's one of their best
Holden
players.
Holden wasn't trying to hurt him. It's just the way he fell and hit the board with his head. Yeah, I mean, that happens.
And Holden basically owned up to the fact that he didn't hit him the right way. And, right. And you know, I respect that. But, you know, it was a tight game. It was a good game. I felt like it could have gone either way. The Islanders were really shut down from the middle of the second period on until the final 5 minutes of the third period. And that's the kind of game the Golden Knights needed to play. Obviously, you look at the Blues game, they gave up 5 goals. 4 goals to Zach Sanford, who was all alone for 3 of them. Much tighter last night by the Golden Knights, and I felt like there's a lot of guys defensively who don't get a lot of credit. Zach Whitecloud played a great game. Braden McNabb is always out there doing his job, blocking shots. Like I said, Shea Theodore, best player on the ice last night.
No, he was, and all around a really good, solid game by the Golden Knights, and just a great game to watch. A lot of fun by both teams. Joining us now on the Fox Sports Residential Bank Corp studio line, a guy that knows a lot about winning, and even though the Islanders didn't win last night, Caleb, I don't know how familiar you are with Ken Morrow, who's our guest, who's joining us from Chicago on the line right now, but Ken Morrow played with the Miracle on Ice, the Olympic team of 1980 that beat the Russians, and of course...
The greatest winners of all time.
But no, check this out. After he gets done winning the gold medal, he gets drafted and goes and plays for the Islanders and wins 4 straight Stanley Cups. For 5 years, this guy didn't know what it was like to lose. The Islanders in their history since 1972 have won 4 Cups. This guy was on all 4 of those teams, as well as the Olympic gold medal team. Kenny Morrow, welcome to the show, man. It's been a little bit.
Hey, thanks, guys. That's quite the introduction.
Well, come on, man. Before we talk about this game, I just got to talk about the history, because I think I told you before when you were on the show about a year and a half ago that, in all seriousness, as a very young man growing up in Detroit, loved the game of hockey, played hockey, and there were a couple guys were the reason I played defense. And you were on the Olympic team, man, and then watching you win 4 straight Stanley Cups, you, Brad Park, there were a couple other guys, Paul Coffey, that were my idols as a kid growing up and thinking, wow, how cool. But what was it like winning the Olympics and then 4 straight Stanley Cups? You didn't know what it was like to lose.
Hey, it's nice to be mentioned with those names. Those were a couple of the old-time greats. I look at it that I was so fortunate. I was drafted by the Islanders in 1976, and I was a freshman in college at the time, and played my college career. You know, the timing for me was perfect with the Olympic team in 1980, and then join an Islander team that was really on the verge of becoming this dynasty at the time. So a lot of it was great timing. Fortunate, you know, in my hockey career that everything worked out the way it did, and as you said, you know, five straight finals my first 5 years. We won 4 cups in a row. So certainly, a great way to start your career.
No question about it. And getting to play, of course, in the Olympics for the legendary coach, Herbie Brooks. What is a guy like that? You know, we all saw a miracle. I mean, we know that part of it was embellished. I didn't think you had a big enough role in the movie, but that was just my opinion. Getting to play for Herbie Brooks, of course, your affiliation with George McPhee, and we saw what he did here constructing this team, the greatest expansion first-year team in the history of professional sports. What did that do for you as a person?
Well, you know, you just brought up a great point when you talk about, you know, the successful teams, you know, with the Olympic team, with the Islanders, with Vegas. It all starts at the top, you know, with the George McPhees, with Herb Brooks, with Al Arbor and Bill Torrey, and it filters on down. And if you don't have that great leadership at the top, you're probably not going to have sustained success. I was, again, lucky enough, to play 1 year with Herb Brooks. You know, the guy was certainly a coaching genius, you know, and ahead of his time. And I've said this many times that I think he should go down with the all-time great coaches of any sport, you know, for what he did. And then, you know, again, talking about fortunate to have come and played my whole career, 10 years, I played in one place, you know, with Bill Torrey and Al Arbor. And, you know, what they built there, what Vegas has built in such a short amount of time, you know, is a recipe for, you know, success and championships.
Yeah, a lot of correlations, too. You talk about that Islanders team, Billy Smith, a hell of a goalie. We have one here in Las Vegas, and the Islanders have a couple right now as well. I was just going to be, before I, again, and I want to get into the game real quick, last night, the Islanders this year, and your thoughts on the Vegas Golden Knights, and of course, when you talk about leadership, they made a change recently, and I want your thoughts on that. But back to that Miracle on Ice team, and we all saw the movie Miracle. Was Herbie Brooks as brutal when you're trying out and in practice as the movie made him out to be?
Well, here's the thing. You know, we had 10 of those players on the Olympic team that played for Herb at the University of Minnesota. And so after they saw the movie, they said, the movie made him look too soft. You know,
wow.
I guess he was harder on him at the University of Minnesota than he was with the Olympic team. But, you know, that was his style. And, you know, there is you know, people saw parts of that and through the movie, but you know, he there was a lot of things that could have backfired that he did. He was what I would say a mastermind psychologist. You know, he knew how to push the right buttons and get the most out of players. That's what made him as successful as he was. And a lot of it could have gone wrong along the way. We were together for 5 months leading up to the Olympics, so we played a lot of games. There was, you know, a lot of ups and downs throughout the year, and probably a lot of times when Herb could have taken the safe route and gone back to what was comfortable at the time, but he didn't, and everything he did worked. And I give Herb full credit for what we did in Lake Placid.
We are talking to Kenny Morrow, Director of Pro Scouting for the New York Islanders, Olympic gold medalist, four-time Stanley Cup champion, and talking a little bit about Herbie Brooks and, of course, the Miracle on Ice, one of the greatest moments in the history of sports at any level in any sport. If you were around in 1980, you know how special that moment was. Most of us remember it. Remember Mike Ruzioni's goal that just literally changed the face of history and hockey and Olympic hockey. It was really, really super cool. You know, Herbie Brooks, of course, died in a tragic car accident. And I keep thinking of the one time in the game where it seemed like you guys weren't focusing. The way the movie made it look, checking out girls in the stands and all that stuff. And next thing you know, after the game, Herbie Brooks is just taking it all in. And after the game, you guys skated till they basically turned the lights off in the arena. Was that embellished?
No, that wasn't embellished. And that's the first question and the most asked question I get from people that have seen the movie. You know, was that true? Did he make you skate in the dark? Yeah, it was true. And I'll give you the quick version of it, was that we played the first part of our pre-Olympic schedule. We went over to Europe and played about 5 or 6 games over there. And 2 of those games were against the Norway national team. And our first game against them, you know, we played to a real lackluster 3-3 tie. This was a team we should have beaten. And so as we go to skate off the ice after the game, Herb is standing there and he stops us and he says to line up, and in the movie they had us lining up at one end of the ice, but we lined up at both ends of the ice, and Herb starts blowing the whistle, and we proceeded to do our conditioning / punishment skating drills, the Herbies we call them. And so we started going in with the Herbies, one end and then the other, and we go through about half hour, 45 minutes of skating. And the rink manager walks out onto the ice, tells Herb that he has to go home, and Herb says, leave me the keys. So, you know, the guy goes and turns the lights off, thinking that'll end it, and we continue to skate in the dark probably for another half hour or so. And I'll tell you what ended it. In the movie, it was more a symbolic thing where they had asked Mike Ruzioni what team he played for, and he says USA. But what actually stopped it was that Herb had given us a little mini break to skate around and kind of catch our breath. And Mark Johnson, who was our best player, and Mark was a very quiet guy, was skating around, and he slammed his stick over the top of the glass and broke it. And I think at that point, Herb knew that he had gotten to us, and And so that ended the skate. And then we played that team a couple nights later, and I think we beat them 9-0. So,
yeah, you guys kicked their ass the next game. I remember it. That is a really cool story, and for all those out there that have seen it, now we know the way it really happened. So cool. Moving forward to today, the Islanders of 2019-2020 are a pretty formidable foe. I know they've stepped in it a bit at the last couple of games, although yesterday it's hard when you see a guy like Varlamov play so well and yet the bitter taste of defeat. What do you do with a game like this, and what do you believe Barry Trotz says to this team after a game like this to say, hey, don't get down. You guys had 43 shots, or excuse me, you guys played not great, but you've got great goaltending behind you, and you know, you didn't take enough shots on goal, obviously. But what does he say?
Well, if anybody can say find the words to say, it'll be Barry Trotz. You know, he's one of the great coaches in the game. I didn't get to see the game. You know, I was scouting another game here in Chicago, as you mentioned. So I'm going to have to go by not having seen what happened last night, but I certainly, the words that I talked to somebody on the phone afterwards, and what I heard was that Varlamov absolutely stood on his head throughout the game. Sounds like that from the way you guys are talking. We're just going through a real rough stretch right now, and teams do that. You know, it's not uncommon for teams to go through these patches where, you know, our offense is dried up. We've been shut out 2 games in a row now. And it doesn't get any easier. We got 2 more road games here on this stretch. So, you know, you got to kind of pull within, you know, as a group. You know, it's nobody's going to feel sorry for you. And, you know, you've got to dig yourself out of these holes. And I think they'll find, you know, they've obviously got to find a way to generate some offense here. And, you know, injuries certainly aren't an excuse for any team. And that's certainly not a crutch that you use as a player. We've got a couple guys out, and, you know, we've got to find a way to fill those holes and score some goals. I mean, I've told my son played soccer. I said, look, you know, you can't win if you don't score. You know, 0 goals just doesn't work in soccer and hockey. So, I think, you know, these coaches, they'll come up with something, and we've got to find a way and get, you know, once that first one goes in, I think the confidence will come back for a lot of guys.
Yeah, there's no question the Islanders can generate goals. And I think the positive you take out of the game is Varlamov and saying, you know, as you head towards the postseason, as we're, you know, less than 2 months away from that, it's kind of nice to see your goaltender playing at the top of his game. Because as we all know, a hot goaltender in the NHL playoffs can make all the difference in the world. We have seen 8 seeds win the Stanley Cup, a la the LA Kings and Jonathan Quick. When a goaltender becomes impermeable, it changes the course and the face of playoff series. And we've seen it time and time again throughout NHL history. And right now, I think you guys had a couple goaltenders that have the ability to do that. Kenny, before I let you go, a couple other questions. We're talking about goaltenders. Marc-Andre Fleury, his 60th career shutout. That's almost a full NHL season of shutouts in a career. This guy, I'm not going to say he's an ageless wonder. He has definitely shown kinks in his armor this year, and getting into his late 30s, you're going to see that. But again, he gets pulled a couple of nights before. He doesn't get pulled very often in his career, and I know for a goaltender, that is embarrassing. You know, that's like getting caught at the prom with your pants down. You just don't want it to happen to you, and you get pulled in an NHL game. And here, the next game, he sits out. You know, you see Malcolm Subban have a nice game, and then Marc-Andre Fleury gets a chance to go back in net. And I'll tell you, he only faced 19 shots last night, Kenny, and if you get to see the game, you'll see it. But 3 or 4 of those shots were absolutely in odd man situations, and he made critical saves at critical times and enough to win this game. What do you have to say about Marc-Andre Fleury, and where do you put him with goaltenders in the history of the National Hockey League?
Well, yeah, I don't want to get ahead of myself here, but he's already one of the all-time greats. You know, he's and the way I kind of look at it, he had kind of one career with the Pittsburgh Penguins, and then he's had kind of another career with the Golden Knights, and you know, the way this guy plays, and I also kind of, you know, viewing from the outside here, I've never really been in the locker room with the guy, but he just looks like the kind of guy that the teammates want to rally around. You know, he has that personality, that bubbly personality that you love to see from a goaltender. And so I'm sure his teammates love him. The guy is still, you know, a top-notch goaltender. And as you said, you know, he's not getting any younger. I certainly, he's one of those guys that you know, when you buy a ticket, you know, you feel like you've gotten your money's worth when you watch this guy play.
No question about it. He is something else. And when you say what looks like, I've got a chance many times in the locker room to talk to him. I always feel like I'm walking up to him and he's going to turn around and put on like a UPS shirt. He doesn't look like a professional athlete, the nicest guy ever. And so accommodating, an incredible superstar in every sense of the word. He is the epitome of what you want to see when you're talking about one of the all-time greats at his sport, at his position. Marc-Andre Fleury is that. And we have been blessed and honored to have him spend the twilight of his career here with the Vegas Golden Knights, and I do think he's got enough left in that tank to make one more run with the Knights. I just hope, you know, like with all athletes, I always hope they hang it up before you outplay or outstay your welcome, because you just don't want to be remembered for the downside of your career. Last question for you. We talked about leadership. I want to know if you were as surprised as a lot of the people here in Las Vegas when Gerard Gallant got the hook for the Vegas Golden Knights. I mean, the first year, as we talked about, the greatest expansion team in the history of professional sports at any level. I've never seen anything like what they did 3 years ago. It was an unbelievable run. We were all flabbergasted. You just kept thinking, my God, when is the slipper going to break? And it finally did in the Stanley Cup Finals against the Washington Capitals. But what a run they had. Last year, outside of a completely botched call with 10 minutes to go in Game 7 against the San Jose Sharks, the Vegas Golden Knights should have moved on to the second round. San Jose did beat Colorado, so it goes to say maybe the Vegas Golden Knights would have gone to the Western Conference Finals back-to-back years. They didn't get that opportunity, but then this year, they're in a little bit of a slide, and Gerard Gallant, who is a very, very popular coach here in Las Vegas, gets canned. Were you surprised about that, and is Pete DeBoer the guy that can take the Golden Knights where Tim Foley and Kelly McCrimmon want him to go?
Well, there's a lot to be answered with those questions. And I can tell you, I mean, this is coming from somebody from the outside. But, you know, I don't know that there's a more well-respected coach than Gerard Gallant. You know, he was actually an assistant with the Islanders for a few years going way back. And the guy just, you know, the respect that everybody has for him is unmatched, truthfully. And you know, Vegas, you know, the original hire with him was you know, couldn't have been better for a franchise just starting out. Gave them instant respect. I think we're just going through, as a league, we're going through kind of an unprecedented time right now. You know, there's been 8 coaches fired during the season this year, which is unheard of. And so I don't know if this was just all kind of, you know, caught up in the whirlwind of something like that, where teams are feeling a little more able, I guess, to make moves in season. Whereas if you go back, you know, and not that long ago, you know, it was something that teams really didn't want to do. But I can't explain why. I don't know if there's just that much more pressure now. The playoff races are so tight that teams are willing to take chances to try and jumpstart teams. And you know, I don't know Peter DeBoer. I certainly know of him, know all the success he's had as a coach. And sometimes, I guess, organizations feel a different voice is needed at a certain time during the season, and maybe I would just chalk it up to that, and we'll see how it goes the rest of the year.
Yeah, we're in Vegas. The jury's out, but like I tell everyone, they know what they're doing. Don't question McCrimmon, McPhee. These guys have been around. They understand the game. They understand player personnel. And Pete DeBoer, one thing I do know about him, again, I'm just getting to know him myself, but he has been known as a motivator, a guy that gets the most out of his hockey players. And that is something that I think the Vegas Golden Knights maybe needed a little kick in the ass, and they're going to get one because Pete DeBoer doesn't stand for any nonsense. Gerard Gallant didn't either. And believe me, Gerard Gallant won't be an unemployed guy for very long. Listen, he is Kenny Morrow, director of player, director of scouting for the New York Islanders. We really appreciate you joining the show, my friend. We'll have you on again. Best of luck to you guys, and I hope you guys do really well in your conference, and maybe we'll see you in the Stanley Cup Finals. Who knows?
That sounds great. Thanks. Thanks, Brian.
Absolutely. Again, Kenny Morrow, Chris, let's take a break. We will come back on the other side. We've got Fact This, and in a little bit we'll be talking to the assistant of the vice president of media relations for the Las Vegas Motor Speedway about the Pennzoil 400 coming up next week.
Fact This. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact This.
Yeah, it's a fact. Former UNLV running rebel Derek Jones Jr. won the 2020 slam dunk contest last night in Chicago. This was pretty cool to watch, but if I'm being honest, the winner should have been Aaron Gordon, who was screwed for the second time, the first being in 2016 when he got beat out by Zach LaVine. Caleb, is it the city of Chicago? Because the last time a slam dunk contest was held in the city of Chicago, Dominique Wilkins was screwed, but it was Michael Jordan. So at least it was a hometown screwing. This time it made no sense whatsoever. What is the deal? And why a guy who you know got screwed in 2016, he was clearly the winner then. We saw that. I mean, that wasn't even close. This was a closer contest. But again, he had the best dunk of the night. I don't know about five perfect tens. I think tens are given out too easily now. But either way, he won the contest, man. What's going on with this?
You know what? I don't know. You can look back at the Michael Jordan, Dominique Wilkins snub and say, like, okay, Jordan was a bigger name in basketball. That's probably why he won. But Zach and Aaron Gordon are kind of like the same level of name. Like, they're not really household names in basketball until after that dunk contest, at least. But so the name thing, it didn't make sense to me the year that happened. I think we got excited and wanted it to go further than it should have because they actually were doing good dunks. And the dunk contest, let's be honest, before 2016 was actually falling off. Like, people were losing interest extremely in the dunk contest until that year.
So controversy made it big.
And I think you had two good dunkers, and you wanted it to go as long as possible before they got tired of dunks. Unfortunately for Aaron Gordon, his last dunk in both of these dunk contests wasn't as memorable. It wasn't as great. This one, I think, hurts worse because I love Jones. You know, he's a good dunker. He's a UNLV guy, so it's like I have respect for him. Obviously, I'm happy he won, but his last dunk wasn't any good either. It's like, at least Zach LaVine. I keep saying it like that because I want to put him in Maroon 5 so bad. But at least his dunk in that 2016 dunk contest was a good dunk. Like, that was an impressive from the free throw line windmill. Like, it was stunning to watch. But Aaron Gordon, without a doubt, has had the best two dunks in the two times he snubbed. When he jumped over the mascot and, like, sat down in the air.
That was ridiculous.
And tucked the ball under his butt.
That
you've never seen before. This year, that 360 windmill off the side of the backboard, like, full extension windmill. The ball literally went 360 degrees at the same extended arm length, and he dunked it on the first attempt. It's ridiculous. Well, not the first attempt. It was the second one. But
still, you're right. It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
And Taco Falls, granted, he did teabag the top of his head, okay, if you want to get technical. But 7'5", come on,
and I'm
man.
I'm going to be honest. Watching in a slow motion, you see something. I think he actually pushed off of Taco a little bit. So that I think that's what the judges saw, too, because when he
put
his hands
Jones's
on the ball.
Dunk any better?
No,
than
it wasn't.
Dunk?
And that's what I said. It should have never even gotten to that. I think once you get to the last two dunkers, it should be the best dunk of the two because both are perfect tens. Okay, so what? Let's decide which one was better.
Or do a dunk off. Or do a dunk off.
Yeah, just don't even score. Just like which one gets the crowd reaction, which one is just better with your eyes. And we talked about it during the break. The celebrity dunker judge, like Common, has Common ever even gotten close to the rim? Has he ever tapped the backboard on a layup? I don't want to see.
Has he ever dribbled between his legs?
I don't want to see Common judge a dunk contest. I'm sorry. If we're going to leave it to a judge,
I'd rather
decision,
the Wiz. Wiz should have judged the contest.
I want experts. Right. I'd rather have an expert dunker judging dunks. I don't need Common, who is a lyricist and a poet, judging a dunk. Like, I don't want that. That's not what I want to see.
Yeah, well, so, there was no poetic justice, no pun intended,
there wasn't.
In the dunking contest. And if you didn't see that, also on All-Star Fun Night, Buddy Hield, man, what a great three-point shooting contest. I'm not so sold on. I mean, what are we going to do next? We've got now the Mountain Dew ball that is like 6 feet behind the three-point. What's going to be next? Like the Allegiant ball that's going to be at half court? You get one shot. I mean, it's getting a little bit ridiculous. ridiculous, but it was pretty cool that Buddy Hield had to knock down five of his six last shots, and he hit the last one.
I like the Mountain Dew ball because that's where the game's gone now. Nobody hovers on the three-point line.
It's a perimeter game.
That's boring, watching Steph Curry and like Damian Lillard.
Is there
going to
ever be a four-point shot, Caleb? No. Are they ever going to develop a four-point shot?
They shouldn't. They absolutely should not. And
I think half-court should be 4 points.
No.
If you shoot beyond half-court,
no.
So you get some stupid people taking hero ball shots.
Kevon Mooring will be in the NBA.
Because then you'd have to watch miserable basketball, and you'd have James Harden shimmy, 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 dribbling. I'd 7% from there, but chunking it up all day long.
I'd be in favor of them taking
red, white, and blue again.
I'd be in favor of them taking the three-point line away.
Going backwards?
I don't know. I think it,
you can't go backwards in time.
Here's why. Because the game today, you know what? You've got these...
You don't have low post basketball anymore.
I hate watching guys, and granted, there's a few, but I blame Kevin Garnett for this, for being a seven-footer who had an outside game, but I like to watch basketball. I like to watch guys like when I was younger.
In the paint.
Guys like Olajuwon, David Robinson,
right.
Shaq, those guys, Pat Ewing, those guys.
Playing with their back to the baskets, man.
I like to see teams run an offense, have to go through the center.
Yeah.
I don't like watching guys just come down and throw it up from wherever on the floor they are because they want to pad their stats.
Yeah.
If you force guys to have an inside game, I think it's better for the game.
No, I'm not going to. I'm not going to.
I think I agree. I think the way certain teams play basketball is terrible to watch. Like, you don't teach skill. You don't teach game plan. You don't teach strategy.
Well, a lot of it's hero ball.
It's just. And watching the Rockets, I will never agree with the way the Rockets play. I'm sorry. You can throw all the analytics at me you want. They haven't won a championship, so that matters. But watching James Harden play, probably one of the most talented scorers of the basketball. But we wouldn't know because not everybody gets a chance to dribble the ball for 20 seconds and do whatever he wants to. So, I mean,
are you saying when we talked about the word you're putting in there?
I mean, we're just going to say because, you know, Kobe's been in the news. But when we talked about Kobe Bryant during his time, imagine, like, if he dribbled the ball that much. He already got a lot of scrutiny for not passing the ball, even though he averaged, like, six assists for his career. But he already got a lot of scrutiny for it. And they ran an offense. Like, the Lakers always ran an offense. Imagine if he came down and it was just, like, four low, single high, one high, and just dribbled the ball and did whatever he wanted to do. He'd get dragged, but James Harden celebrated for it. And he's, like, got this whole fear of the beard and untouchable mystique in it. But then his teams are always losing. And it's, like, the worst brand of basketball to watch. And for whatever reason, they keep going to it. And part of it is a three-point line, but I think most teams don't have that. And it should be. I think three-point line is good enough because it's a strategic advantage, but it's not ridiculous over the top. So
no, I'll give you that. And I don't want to take the credit away from – it was cool seeing Derrick Jones Jr., a guy that I thought should have stayed in college longer. He had the Dave Rice debacle going on, and that kind of pushed him out. But, you know, he was a one-and-done anyways.
He's on a good team. He's on a really good team in Miami.
And he's seeing the floor.
Yeah, he's getting good minutes. He's winning dunk contests. I mean, things are working out for him. It doesn't happen all the time from guys that leave early from UNLV. Like, you know. We've had some bad early exits out of UNLV.
We've had some bad picks out of UNLV.
Yeah, but number one overall picks and stuff. Yeah. Like, just where's he at now? Where's Bennett now? Is he still in the G League?
I think he's selling insurance. I'm really? Not sure. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know where he is. Maybe
he works at Finley Toyota.
Hey, listen, speaking of UNLV real quickly, we do got to mention that UNLV did get a big road win at the Pit yesterday. Not the easiest place to play, 78-73. You know, their first game without Donnie Tillman, who looks like last year's Pac-12 six-man player of the year that they picked up from Utah, is out for the season. At least that's the theory right now. Sprained his knee. And they're going to have to make up because I thought Tillman was the second best player on this team this year behind Bryce Hamilton. Now you have to make up for his minutes, and last night they did. They got the win in the Pit. It's amazing. They're one game under 500, but they're still in the mix for a bye getting to the Mountain West Conference tournament, although I think their toughest games are still in front of them. Huge road win for him last night.
Yeah, well, I think this was one of those toughest games ahead of them. When we talked about this team early in the season when they were on that hot streak to start off Mountain West play, we were talking about this being one of those games that you see them losing, like late in the season, because it's the top or the upper echelon, if you will, of the conference in Mexico. Even though they've had a funky year, they're still one of the toughest teams to play in at their home court. I think San Diego State's the only other team to beat them at home, and they're number four in the nation. So it's like playing there is still a tough task. For them to come out of this with a win, I didn't expect it. Like I'm not going to say that New Mexico's juggernaut.
No, especially the last loss. The arena was so heartbreaking.
Absolutely, but I didn't expect this to be a win. I expected for the season to start off good. They had a really good start that was unexpected, and then I expected it to tail off as the meat of the schedule and the tougher part of the schedule is just on the back end with all these road games against the top tier teams. But stealing wins like this one helped to keep you in that contention for that first week bye and finishing in the top half of the Mountain West, which is going to be a shock if they do that. In year one of TJ's coaching era here at UNLV basketball, if he finishes in the top tier, maybe not just a first-round bye in the conference, but wins that first actual game in the conference playoffs and finishes in the top half of the conference, I think that's an impressive first
season.
Well,
if he gets a bye and he wins the first game, he's in the semifinals.
Exactly, and that's what I'm saying. That's huge. So getting this bye is big. So winning that game is big because New Mexico is one of those teams that's right there in the mix as well. But this gets some separation. I don't know that they steal anymore. They got Colorado State, who they already lost to.
The most surprising team in the conference.
Absolutely,
this year.
But I think it's a home game, I believe. But playing them on your home court might be an advantage. But you get that win. I see them. They get that bye. It's going to be a good season, I think. Even at this point, you could say it's been a good first season. When you consider the conference play, you consider the four overtime losses that they had early in the year that could have gone either way and probably should have won. This was a good inaugural season for TJ, if you're already looking back at it. Now, there's still some work to be done. We'll see. They could go 0-for in the last few games. But as it is right now, they've pulled off some pretty surprising wins. I like where they sit right now in conference play.
To me, the biggest surprise this year has been the emergence of Bryce Hamilton. I don't know that I'm overly surprised by how the team's done. They're a game under 500. Maybe I'm surprised as where they're sitting in the Mountain West right now. But right now, I would say they pretty much are what I thought they would be, except, like I said, the emergence of Bryce Hamilton has been a nice surprise. He has proved that he could be a D1 player at any level, probably play at any university. And the other biggest surprise besides San Diego State still hanging in the top five in the country is Baylor. I still think this team is a house of cards that will collapse in the NCAA tournament. We'll talk more about that in future shows. Right now, we are going to take a break. We're going to come back on the other side with Blazin', and we will be talking to Jeff Motley, who is the Vice President of Public Relations for the Las Vegas Motor Speedway, about next week's Pennzoil 400. This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. It is time for Blazin', brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango, Montecito Crossing Plaza. Two happy hours every day. A long field goal away from the Centennial Hills Hospital out there up in Centennial. And we're out there every Monday night during football season for Monday Night Football, the best parties in Vegas. And also coming up, don't forget, tomorrow night we have our next Vegas Golden Knights watch party. It's going to be out at the Buffalo Wild Wings on Horizon in Henderson. I'll be out there with the Wiz. We'll be giving away a bunch of Vegas Golden Knights bling, and we have lower bowl seats at T-Mobile Arena for the following Vegas Golden Knights home game. So definitely come on out and see us tomorrow night. We'll be out there at Buffalo Wild Wings having a good time. But Blazin' right now, I'm going to go last. Let's start with you, Caleb. What's Blazin', brother?
Well, we just discussed this during the break. Me and the Wiz, we were talking about this because the Raptors, I think, are Blazin' right now. They're pretty hot. And I just looked at it, and it actually shocked me to see it because I know there was some buzz about them being a playoff team, even minus Kawhi Leonard. And with Pascal Siakam having some injury issues too during the year, he's an all-star, by the way. But and Kyle Lowry did make the All-Star team too. But 15-1 in the last 16 games leading up to the All-Star break, they sit at number two in the Eastern Conference. Arguably the coach of the year. Me and Wiz will have this discussion at some point, who the coach of the year in the NBA should be. But the Raptors are Blazin' right now. And it's, you know, that time of the year where people start making playoff pushes. And who would have thought, absent Kawhi Leonard, that Toronto would still be in contention in the East. But they're number two, of course, behind Milwaukee. So they're Blazin' right now. I like it.
I like it. Mags, what you got?
Well, I'm going to go with Ron Rivera. He is he's the coach of the Washington Indigenous Peoples. And he was the former coach of the Carolina Panthers. And yesterday he had a garage sale, I guess a moving sale.
Yeah, yeah.
In the city of Charlotte, raised $30,000, which he's donating to the Humane Society, I assume, of Charlotte, North Carolina. So
that's great. Classy dude, man.
I'm a big advocate for animals. Love the dogs. So I thought that was really cool.
I saw that too, and then I also saw that. Did you see that they cut Josh Norman? Yeah, like immediately. Yeah, like, as soon as he got there, he's like, I've seen this before. You're out of here.
I've read this book before. You stink. You're overpaid.
Get
bye
out
bye.
Of here. The Raiders should be all over that guy. I'm just going to say that.
I like it. Well, listen, I got a couple blazings. One, talking about $30,000, Mags, how about at the hockey game last night? Ruben, the first guy in 3 years, five straight goals from center ice to win himself a bunch of prizes plus $30,000 last night at the Golden Knights game. That was pretty cool. Also, speaking of the Golden Knights, you got to give it up for Marc-Andre Fleury, his 60th career shutout. Yeah, he only stopped 19 shots, but a couple of them were crucial. While the Golden Knights were peppering on the other end, he held up his end of the bargain. 60 career shutouts. That is 22 shutouts short of an entire season of shutouts. Just incredible. And, of course, Blazin, and it'll segue into our guest right now, has been holding patiently for a few minutes. I got to go. Jimmy Johnson. Well, hasn't done anything lately, but he announced that this will be his last season with NASCAR. This guy has won 7 NASCAR Cup Series championships, tied for the most of all time, 5 consecutive championships won, which is a NASCAR Cup Series record, and he is the first race car driver to be named AP Male Athlete of the Year in 2009. He won the race here in Vegas 4 times, including 3 in a row in 2005, 2006, and 2007. When it was the UAW Daimler Chrysler 400, and he also won it again in 2010 when it was called the Shelby American. This guy is truly an icon when it comes to racing. He will go down as NASCAR as one of the greats of all times, and you got a chance to see him next weekend at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway again. His second to last time, I think he'll be there in September as well. But joining us right now, Jeff Motley, the Vice President of Public Relations at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Jeff, that adds a little bit of spice to this race next Sunday.
I don't think there's any question. I think maybe for the Las Vegas race, it'll be a little bit more spice in the fall when we know it's going to be Jimmy's last race in Vegas. But certainly today is going to be his last Daytona 500. I'm sure it's a pretty emotional day for him being down there. And it ought to be an exciting race today. And also look forward to next weekend a lot.
Well, next weekend, nothing like NASCAR race weekend. And I tell people all the time, I was not a NASCAR fan. I was an open wheel guy until I moved out to Vegas, started covering the race, started going as early as 2004 to this the races out at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway. And I am hooked. I'm addicted. Every year I go, I love it. I love reporting it. I love the feel and the sounds in the pit. And I bring it to you guys the week afterwards. A pretty exciting race. What are we expecting next week? I know last year Joey Logano got the checkered flag in this one, and the last guy to win out there was Martin Truex Jr. won the September race, but right now a lot of hot drivers, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. holding the pole at Daytona. What are we expecting next week, Jeff?
Oh, I don't expect to see Ricky Stenhouse Jr. on the pole. I'll tell you, I think, you know, we've seen at Las Vegas certain guys who seem to rise to the top. The Penske guys, Joey and Brad Keselowski, are always tough in Vegas. Kevin Harvick is always really good. Kyle Busch is really good, and Kevin Harvick is really good. Those 5 guys right there, Harvick, Truex, Busch, Keselowski, and Logano, I think they are the 5 guys that you are going to have to watch. I mean, Denny Hamlin, he's probably one of the top guys out there, has never had great success in Las Vegas. He's never won in Las Vegas. He's kind of becoming a little bit of a sentimental favorite, although I know he got a setback at Daytona today. I think he's got to start at the rear because they failed inspection. But I think you're going into Las Vegas, you've got to look at those 5 guys I mentioned as certainly the favorites. And then I think you probably can try to say, okay, who might be somebody that might surprise people? Then I think you look at a Ryan Blaney or an Eric Jones or somebody like that.
I like them all, and I agree with you. Denny Hamlin overdue to have a really good showing and win the race out here. And Brad Keselowski, I've always said this guy's like a throwback. He's back to the Cale Yarborough days, man, when they were rubbing and bumping. And Keselowski is just somebody that, the bottom line, if he is in it at the end, you got to watch out for him because he does whatever it takes to win. And he is, in my opinion, one of the most fun drivers to watch on the circuit. Jeff, how can people still get tickets? And if you're right now listening to the show and you're looking to buy a package, what would you recommend people go and get?
Well, I mean, I think coming out for the entire weekend, because if you come out for the weekend, basically the cost of the tickets is about 40% off of if you had to buy each of them individually. We've got the truck race on Friday night. We've got the Xfinity race on Saturday afternoon, and then the Pennzoil 400 on Sunday. Tickets are still available at lvms.com. But look, it's going to be 72 degrees and sunny next weekend in February in Las Vegas. Get outdoors. Don't be sitting inside. Come out and enjoy the races. You can walk right up to the ticket office and buy a good seat.
It's awesome. We are going to be giving away a couple of tickets here to actually a Facebook Live participant today. Both, we got two tickets to Saturday's race and two tickets to Sunday's race. The two best comments on Facebook Live, I'm going to hook up with a pair of tickets each, and I'll be giving Jeff the winners of those. He is Jeff Motley. Again, we appreciate you joining the show, Jeff. It's great every year. Love having him on, and I love this race, the Vice President of Public Relations at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway. And the one thing, like you said, the weather is great out there, but always bring something warm with you. It's easy to shed clothing. It's hard to put it on when you don't have it. And I have been at the Speedway where one minute I am absolutely baking in the sun, and the next minute I'm freezing my you-know-what off. So be prepared, but it is always a tremendous time. And as cold or as hot as you get, it's hard to leave that race, and it is hard to explain the excitement of the reverberation of those cars unless you are out there at LVMS experiencing it. Jeff, we appreciate it. Appreciate you, brother.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Guys, real quick as we wrap up the show, I want to say that you guys, can I get some props, man? I won.
You will get nothing and like it.
I won, man.
You won a lunch, and we get to pick. We're going to go
11,
buy some
10 and 1, man. I'm over 500.
Some Tyson anytizers, the Tyson in the frozen aisle at Sam's Club. I'll buy you some nuggets, and I'll let you dip them in ketchup, not even barbecue
sauce. I'm going to make the Wiz at least get me a corn dog during happy hour at Sonic, man, because he had a chance to pick it. He was in the driver's seat going into the Super Bowl, and he had the first chance to pick, and he took the 49ers. All three of us took Kansas City. I took Kansas City by default.
I was really close.
Caleb said they'd win by 14, and they would win by 14 late.
Yeah.
That was pretty good. You dialed into the psychic last week, didn't you?
No, I did. I actually went against her. I went 31. My score was 31-17, I think. And that's what I had it being.
I
was a field goal away. They had that second half field goal on that drive after the pick.
He was right there. Even though he ended the season at 8-12-2.
Who cares?
He was right there for the Super Bowl. The last game of the season is all that matters.
Tanking for the draft.
They only remember the end and the champion. That's it. Listen, we're here every Sunday, same time, 8 to 9. I'm Brian Feldman along with Caleb Herring, Chris Magnum Chapman, and, of course, The Wiz! I can't do it as good as Caleb, but I can do the Ostrovsky just as good as anybody out there. Listen, join us next week. We'll have some more good things coming up. We got at WNBA starting soon. The Aviators are starting up soon, and maybe even some XFL talk. I never thought I'd be saying that on this show, but I'm actually getting into the XFL. It's pretty cool. And don't forget, tomorrow night, Buffalo Wild Wings at the Horizon location in Henderson, Vegas Golden Knights watch party, where we will be giving away lower bowl seats to a Vegas Golden Knights game. You don't want to miss that. Once again, this is Out of Line. We are here every Sunday, 8 to 9, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. We want to thank our title sponsor, the Residential Bank Corp, funding America one neighbor at a time. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.